This is SQPN, the StarQuest Production Network, leading the way.
This episode of The Secrets of Once Upon a Time is brought to you by Bluehost, a great company for your website or blog, and very affordable. Just $6.95 per month and great service and support. Setting up your blog is super easy, just one click of a button, so you can focus on your content instead of having to worry about technology. Go to sqpn.com/Bluehost for more information or to sign up. And by the Amazon Store. Click on the link on our website before you do your Christmas shopping at Amazon, and your purchase will help support our show.
You mean your son's heart, Rumpelstiltskin?
No. I never loved Rumpel.
Well, then whose heart do we need? Who do you love?
Love can mean many things, Felix. It doesn't just come from romance or family. It can also come from loyalty, friendship. Only one person has always believed in Pan.
Me.
Don't be afraid. Be flattered.
No!
Well, you can definitely say that his heart went out to Peter Pan. Welcome to another episode of Secrets of Once Upon a Time, in which we discuss the winter finale, episode number 57 of this podcast, and we're going to talk about Going Home, a winter finale that felt like a season's finale and perhaps even a series finale. Joining me today to talk about everything we've seen in this pretty dramatic and spectacular winter finale are three co-hosts, Shelley, Deborah, and Inge. Now, of course, the first question is the most important one, and that is, how would you rate this episode? What were your initial feelings, your initial emotions, perhaps, while watching this season's finale? Inge, what about you?
Well, it should be a very, say that, emotional roller coaster. At least I saw on Twitter a lot of people twittering that, but I have to say I wasn't emotionally that attached. It felt more like what I think Shelley said last week. It's more plot driven, so to progress the plot. So I was like, oh, okay. I don't know. I'm not sure if I liked it. So I liked some parts. I hated other parts. So I would
rate it
like 7 out of 10.
We'll go into that later. What about you, Shelley?
Oh, I've got a 9.75 on this one.
Wow.
And the 0.25 are for the little things that they kind of wrapped up really quickly that I wasn't thrilled about, but I give them a pass because the beginning, it started with this just rah, and then it ended with tears, and it was just all wrapped up and everything kind of got answered, and then it laid it out for next season. You're like, whoa.
And Deborah, what did you think?
Because I was watching the episode and at various points I kind of what would Father ask if I said at this point what I would, and so I went from 6 to 4
to really?
Back up to 8, and then I think I stayed at 8 at the end. I'm like, oh, that's okay, that's satisfying. All right.
Wow. So your rating actually fluctuated during the show.
Yes, it did.
Well, I was impressed by this episode. I had high hopes. I thought there were a lot of things that were set up in the first part of this season, and I was very curious to see how they would resolve certain things. The way they resolved it was very much beyond anything I expected. And as I said in my introduction, this could have been a series finale if they had left out the final 3 minutes with Hook showing up at the doorstep of Emma and Henry. I think they could have just left it at that, and it would have been a bittersweet finale of the entire series, but not completely out of place, and actually a kind of a good way to at least finish most of the storylines.
I agree with that.
The way they did it now was you know what? The one thing I thought at the end of this episode was Back to the Future. Remember the ending of the first Back to the Future movie, if you're old enough to have seen that? But it's like everything is wrapped up, and Marty is back in the present, and he's reunited with his girlfriend, and you think it's all over, and then all out of nowhere, this souped-up version of the DeLorean shows up in their lane. Now it can fly, and it can burn, what is it, banana peels for fuel, and out comes Doc saying, "Marty, you have to come with me to the future." And what's wrong? We just came back. And it's, "No, it's about your children." And this episode was exactly like that. You got to come back to whatever, you know, fairy tale land. There's something happened and it's your family. And it's like, wow, this is so similar to the way they ended that first Back to the Future movie. And now everything is possible because it's basically a huge reset of the entire series and of the storylines. So what that means and what it could mean for the second part of this third season, we hopefully will be able to discuss in this episode. But of course, before we do that, we have to go back to the beginning and, talk about everything that happened. And I agree with Inge. Perhaps one of the flaws of this episode was that there was just so much happening, and they needed to wrap up so many story threads that there seemed to be a little less time for kind of the emotional moments. Or however, I do think the perception was different when I look at all the discussions on the internet. Some people very emotional about it, loved it. Other people was like, wow, it felt rushed. And even some other people thought, well, they totally jumped the shark. And before we discuss the series, I want to read two pieces of feedback that Inge gathered from our blog. First reaction was by Ruth, who writes, "Can you please mention that no one said anything to Belle about Rumple after he died?" And that's one of those moments where they just didn't have time. They didn't have time to mourn. They didn't have time to say to Belle how sorry they were, because there was just too much happening. And Ruth also writes, "When Hook was saying goodbye to Emma, he said, 'Not a day will go by. I won't think of you.' And Emma said, 'Good.' Hook had a slight smile and raised an eyebrow. There was definitely more of a connection there than when Emma hugged Neil." I definitely think that the how do they call them, the Emma Fire shippers, are kind of at
Swan
a
Swanfire.
Or the Swanfire shippers, they are at a disadvantage here, because it definitely seems that there is a little bit more magic between Hook and Emma than between Neil and Emma. But then again, a lot can happen. I mean, Emma said good, but almost in an ironic way. So I'm not sure about that, Ruth. And then Bill, very, very disappointed by this episode. He writes, "Regrettably, Once Upon a Time has jumped a shark. This is the last episode I will watch. This series should have ended last season. Instead of concentrating on resolving the issues in Storybrooke and Fairytale Land, we're off on a series of wild goose chases just trying to keep the lame plot inflated. Pan switching places with Henry was the last straw. This was a wonderful show when it juxtaposed the characters in Storybrooke with those in Fairytale Land. Now it just drones on. Nearly 13 million people in the US were on board when it debuted, the show, when it started. Now we're down to 8.5 million and falling. Creating a spin-off called Once Upon a Time in Wonderland will only prolong the agony." So very disappointed reaction as well. And that seems to be the case all over the place. Fans are either super excited about it or, you know, let down, and it wasn't what they hoped. Some are still in shock. They just can't believe what they've seen. Just one remark about the ratings. Actually, the show is doing a lot better than during the first few episodes of this season, and it is climbing every week. And this final show and the previous show have actually broken a lot of records when it comes to specifically the target audience for this particular television series in the demographic of young adults, which is, for this show, the target audience. And I think this last episode jumped, and this is like live viewing plus delayed viewing, so it's like a week after the show airs and then what people rewatch on their TiVos and on the website, that combined, there was a jump in of 67% between last episode and this episode. So I think they succeeded in catching people's interest again, and at least this finale did what it needed to do, and that is to bring back people, create a good cliffhanger so that hopefully these people will be back when the show starts again in March. So I'm not sure if this was a wrong move or if they really truly jumped a shark. I think it was, well, judging from the numbers, from the ratings, this was a good move, and it was very effective. However, what we think about that move emotionally and about what happens, that is what we're going to discuss right now. So let's go back to the beginning of the episode, and I've got a really nice summary here that you found, Inga, on the internet, and I think at least when I was reading it, it was like, yeah, that's exactly how I feel about some of these moments. So we see that Peter Pan, in the body of Henry, is now starting to execute his plan to turn Storybrooke into New Neverland. And Felix, his trusty aide, is with him. And they're standing at the famous well that we've seen so many times. And you'd think if that is just a dangerous, like, chemistry lab laboratory for evil magic, shouldn't they just have dumped some concrete in it? I was just surprised that it was still there, just sitting there waiting for more evil magic to be executed with that thing. But anyway,
well, they couldn't dump it off. It's got to go to that water. It had something to do with the water in the bottom of the well.
Oh, yeah. Anyway,
that's where all the magic is.
I would just put a guard there, just one of the dwarves or something with a pickaxe to prevent anyone from executing evil magic. But anyway, Pan can do what he wants. So he stole more ingredients than I thought from the evil witch's underground laboratory. And so one by one, he throws these bottles into the well, and it starts bubbling, and you see this green fog rising up. But apparently he forgot one last ingredient. He needs the heart of the person he loves most, and Felix thinks it's Rumple, but we all know that Pan didn't care at all for Rumpelstiltskin, and so I could see this coming from, you know, a mile away. Like, of course it's going to be Felix. So it's like, whoop, whoop, poof, and there we go. No more Felix. So his name, which means lucky, didn't really work out. No happy ending for Felix. I was again impressed by how evil Peter Pan is portrayed, even though he's now played, of course, by the actor who normally plays Henry. But it's kind of chilling to see that he's willing to kill anyone and to sacrifice anything just to grab the power. And if we step back, I think it's pretty amazing what the writers do here with the original story of Peter Pan, where, you know, we all love Peter Pan in the Disney movie. We all want to be Peter Pan, at least I wanted to be as a child. And they somehow turned him into, I think, the most evil villain of the entire series so far.
Yes. Yes, because it's the first time we've had a villain that we weren't either secretly cheering or guiltily feeling like there's got to be some redemptive component for him. But no, he was the emperor. We just, that's it. There's no redemptive quality available in him at all.
Right.
And it was right there when he said, "I don't love Rumple."
Yeah.
You're like, whoop, that's it.
It made me think about what you said last week, Father, about the sin against the Holy Spirit. If there's no love in someone, then someone cannot be open to love, and then he can also not be forgiven because there's no room for it.
Yeah, it's like someone who's who has closed his heart entirely, and so love has no grip on it. It can't break it open. It can't, you know, there's no hold on that heart. And that's what we see with Peter Pan. That's why he's doomed, ultimately. So either he is doomed or he will doom everyone else. But there is no no redemption, and we don't get to see his backstory, which is still a bit disappointing. I was hoping that they would stay true to the format of this show, where, you know, evil is always explained or at least made plausible. And in this case, we seem to deal with a guy who is just the biggest egotistic psychopath. Yeah.
Also when he confronts Rumpel, when he was born, you were a larvae, and the way he describes that, I was like, I cannot believe that a father can say that about his newborn son. That's then something is seriously wrong with
you. Well, and this episode, and that's what I think is great about it, is ultimately all about the choice you make to either refuse or accept, to welcome or to reject, which returns in the revision of the past of Emma later on in the episode, where we first see the moment where she refuses to be a mother. She doesn't want to be a mother, and she doesn't want to look at Henry. And then later on, when her memories are reconstituted or recreated, we see that same scene, and there she makes a choice to changes her mind, and she chooses to become a mother. And I loved how they did that. It was a false memory, but still, it was a memory in line with what Emma went through, what she learned over the course of this story, where she grew into becoming, you know, to accepting Henry, to becoming a mother, and so this memory, yes, it's a false memory, but it's still in line with what could have happened. But with Peter Pan, he seems to be the total opposite of that. There is just this refusal from the start. There is no indication that he ever changed his mind. And until the very last breath on this earth, he continues to be only interested in himself and in having power. And
now, I'm okay with not having a backstory for Peter Pan. Mm-hmm. Because you need a foundation, you need somewhere where everything grew, and he is the root.
Yeah,
he is the root of all of it. Because what he did to Rumpel is the pain that caused Rumpel to go dark. Rumpel, what he did is what caused. Cora, remember, she became, her pain was being the Miller's daughter and being trod upon and being insulted by Snow's mother. And it grew and it grew and it grew into this huge, I mean, it's amazing how much came out of this tiny little one person. One person and what he did affected all of their lives.
Yeah.
So I'm okay with not going farther down. I'm okay with him being the very base of the story.
Almost sounds like the origin of the original sin. So it kind of spreads like an oil patch over the earth. And
yeah.
So everything that comes in contact with it gets tainted by it.
I think in a way Peter Pan's story kind of reflects or is an analogous to the concept of the fall of the angels in Catholic theology, where even before the fall of Adam and Eve, there were these spiritual beings that we encounter all over the all over the history of the people of Israel, and even in the New Testament, these angels, these pure spirits, and since they're pure spirits and they're not living in time like we live, they are still free creatures. They have a free will just like us, but their choice, being outside of time, is immediate and is definitive. That's kind of the idea. So if there is no time, then there is only, it's like a binary choice. You either choose to be in favor of God or you turn away from Him. You either open up to love or you turn away from it. And that's kind of the sin or the damage that precedes the fall of Adam and Eve. That is why in the story of Genesis there is this creature, this serpent, this snake that lures Adam and Eve into sinning and following in that fall. It's a narrative way to express this intuition that even before mankind sinned and turned away from God, there were other creatures that did the same. And in a way, Peter Pan, the way he is depicted in this series is like that. We discover in this episode that actually his refusal to love, to be a father, to do what he's called to do, goes back to the very first beginning of Rumpelstiltskin. The moment that Rumpel was born, there was this total refusal. You know, you were this worm, and there is this attitude of rivalry. So this child will rob me from something that I want for myself. So there's the refusal to sacrifice yourself, which is ultimately the greatest love, is to give your life. And when you become a parent, and I'm not, but Shelley, you know how this works. The moment you have children, you lose part of your life and you will never get it back.
Yes.
Right?
Absolutely. I mean, your whole life has to change. Your whole focus is your children. And I loved how that all came about in this episode with Regina.
Yeah.
We haven't gotten to Regina yet, but oh my gosh, the redemption of Regina. And Rumpel, the redemption of Rumpel. We've been waiting for these moments for them to could they, would they, would we see it? And now mm-hmm. we do, that they are willing to die for their children.
Yeah.
For the love of their children. And that's what every parent, when you first hold that baby and you're like, oh my gosh, I am responsible for another human being.
Right.
My happiness, my responsibility is gone. It's now all about them. And raising them and getting them to be a good, moral, upstanding citizen and send them forth in this world with all the proper tools and virtues.
And you sacrifice a lot of your own freedom and your own possibilities, because now you have to take care of this child, and especially in the first months, it's day and night. You know, you sacrifice a lot. However, what you learn as parents and what you experience as a child is that sacrifice ultimately bears a lot of fruit, because your joy and your happiness is multiplied and it becomes much bigger than it could ever have been had you been alone and without children. And that is something that we see Peter Pan refuse completely, and that's why this series, this story, is so amazing. We also see the counterpart of that. We see that both Rumpelstiltskin and Regina, also Emma, and all the other characters that have children have already discovered that instead of your family being a burden, being something that is rivaling your own space, your own happiness, family is ultimately enhancing your happiness. It is creating that happy ending that everybody longs for. But you can only discover it if you are willing to sacrifice yourself, your own happiness, your own comfort, to make place for that other, for that family. And that is so fundamental and such a beautiful lesson, I think, that is taught here in this episode. But anyway, we're getting all theoretical and preachy, and let's go back.
I was going to say, you mentioned something else that I really liked about the episode. I wasn't sure. It was one of those things I wasn't positive. But when they kept doing they started reinforcing that your happy ending isn't always what you plan it to be.
True.
You have to move and roll and go, and it changes, it evolves. And I think that kind of goes in with what you're commenting here about children mm-hmm. and the love of your children, because they're not always what you expect them to be or you want
right,
them to be.
Right.
And so, you know, when they go and have the scene in Emma's nursery, and again, what was with the wig? It just doesn't look like snow to me. It's a little off. And she's a little upset. I'm not used to seeing her quite so mm-hmm. hysterical. She's very emotional, and usually she's all pulled together. And Charming is reassuring her. Well, it's not what we wanted, but we can't stop the curse. The best we can do is trust and have faith that she's going to find us, and we're going to get there. And they say it. They said it again in another place, that the happy ending, you know, isn't always what you're looking for.
Yeah.
Anyway, it was a really nice theme in there.
And in a way, that is what happens to Rumpel, where what he thinks is not a happy ending actually is a happy ending. It's just so different from what he ever imagined. And I think he happily gives his life to make sure that everyone else has a happy ending. So in a way, that is totally different from what everybody thought, including us.
I love the words. I'm a villain. Villains don't get happy endings. But at the same time, he was sacrificing himself so that Bay could live.
Yeah.
Everything he's done has been for Bay. And here he didn't want to do it. He didn't want to do it. He's always been a coward. He's always been afraid of sacrificing himself for his son. And there in the ultimate moment, with his son under a direct threat, he does it.
And you know what? You know what? And here I'm going to
go into all at the same time.
I'm going into speculation area here, but I think that that was such a heroic deed, and it surpassed so much anything else that he had done in terms of goodness in the past, that that should be rewarded. I think that that might actually redeem him in the end for the rest of this season. So I would not be surprised if, because of what he did, he gets another chance and he gets to, he's restored to life.
You shall not pass a Gandalf moment.
Yeah, yeah, that too. Yeah, it's kind of
a
great redemptive moment where when he comes back, he now will be Rumpelstiltskin the White. He will be changed.
Well, he won't be the Dark One anymore.
No, because that curse is also lifted and it's destroyed.
And he did it with his own dagger, with his own hand.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's no speculation there about,
right,
well, if you killed the Dark One, you become the Dark One. His power is transferred to you. Well, he killed the Dark One in himself. Yeah. The boy will be your undoing.
Exactly. That's what I was thinking.
It may not mean death. It still may just mean the Dark One curse is lifted off of him.
Yeah.
Will he still have magic? I don't know. I mean, he did know how to do magic, but they've set it up. It's going to be great. It's going to be great. I'm so excited.
I think so too. Anyway, let's listen to a sound clip here about the curse, the coming curse, and what it means.
This was supposed to be hers. We had such a plan.
Listen to Blue. Have hope we can prevail.
This curse has destroyed every dream this family ever had.
We don't know what the future holds for us.
Now, how do you know that it holds anything good?
Because the unknown isn't always bad. Life is full of twists and turns you never see coming. This curse, it's just a turn.
But all I ever wanted was for us to raise our child together. That was our happy ending. And now it's gone.
The future we imagined is gone, but that doesn't mean we can't find another one. An unexpected one.
This is such a great clip, and I think there is definitely a double entendre here. Yes, they're talking about the curse and about their own lives, but this is also the writers telling us this curse, the second curse, is just a turn. And yes, the story now goes in a totally different direction from what you expected, but there is still hope. You know, keep watching. We'll be back. It will be good. And so I was laughing out loud when I saw this scene, even though it was very dramatic, because I was like, that is their message to us, is don't give up on this series yet, because we have more in store and it's going to be very different from what you expect. I love that there is this new dilemma. You know, so Peter Pan is reactivating the curse, and now there's only one way to stop it, and that is if you have that the original scroll on which the curse is written. And so there is this plot, which was a little bit convoluted, a bit Deus ex machina, where, remember that wand, remember the black fairy, and there is still this wand, and that will actually help us do the switch again, and then Henry can just bring the scroll and all is going to be well. What did you think of that whole dark black fairy? That came out of nowhere for me.
I think the first thing I thought about it was like, oh, maybe that's the evil witch that's become she's wearing black, all black, right?
Uh-huh. But
so
the wicked witch
of Oz, because they have been doing all those Oz references everywhere. They have been teasing us the whole time with it. So it's like, well, they have to follow up on it. You cannot just scatter Oz references
But a witch is very different from a fairy, so
that's why she's sent away because she wasn't a fairy anymore, but she turned into a witch.
I'm not sure.
I think
that
would be
that.
the easy answer, and I it works. I'm not saying I wouldn't like to see that. I thought that's one of those moments that got my 10 dropped down to like a 9.75.
Mm-hmm.
That went in, oh, gee, we just need this black fairy wand.
Right,
and oh,
right.
gee, all we had to do was toss the light with the shadow into a fire in the church and woof, it's gone. And wow, that's amazing.
The whole church scene
felt, fairy woke up.
Felt a little bit contrived and was just, we need an action scene here and we need Hook to do something heroic and well, let's go.
And then sister comes alive.
I was so laughing out loud. It was like, if Father Roderick sees this, he's yelling at his TV.
death apparently is not final.
In, they walk back into Gold's shop. It's like, the blue fairy's returned, and nobody says,
Yeah, I noticed that too. It's like, okay. It was like, okay. What?
Well, of course, it happens all the time that people resurrect from the dead.
It was funny.
You know, I have to say, it reminded me, I used to watch Days of Our Lives years and years and years, a long time ago, and Stefano DiMera. I kept thinking, well, it's like Days of Our Lives. People, they die, but they don't die. And they just come back to life, and okay, we just accept it. Well, how many times has he died now?
It does feel, I mean, it is dangerous to do that story-wise, because now at every death we will think, including Rumpelstiltskin's death, we'll think, oh, well, you know what? It's probably going to just temporarily. They'll just bring him back. And so it puts every new death under, just makes us skeptical. It's like, well, you know what? So it robs future deaths from their dramatic value, because we're never sure if the person is truly going to be dead. So I'm not sure, but and I also wonder why they needed to bring back the blue fairy. Is it just to say, well, here are your wings back? It just felt like, you know, she could have just been dead. There are lots of other nuns there in the monastery.
But, no, I think you're right. I think it was just to end the Tinkerbell question.
I guess. Which was kind of nice to see that wrapped up. You know what? For a moment, I was thinking that Tinkerbell actually was evil. Because at one point, she is like, oh, yeah, I want to go with you. And I don't know. There was something I was like, I wouldn't be surprised if, after all, Tinkerbell is in cahoots with Peter Pan and she was evil all along and she had this big master plan. But no, not really. She's just redeeming herself by using that bit of magic, the pixie dust that she had left, and she catches the shadow with a coconut and a candle, which still is so weird to me. It's like, where did they get that idea?
And does that shadow never learn? Because if you get trapped the first time that way, then you don't... you say that a donkey doesn't bump into the same stone twice? That's what you say in Dutch.
Yeah, they should have known. But anyway.
I said out loud, why didn't they just throw the coconut and destroy the shadow when they were in Neverland? And my daughter looks at me and rolls her eyes and says, because they needed it for the sale, Mom.
Oh, that's it. Yeah, good thinking.
What does it mean for Greg? Because Greg got killed in Neverland.
Yeah.
Ripping his shadow off. So now he has his shadow back too. So where is he? In Neverland? Or in our world, or is he bumping into Emma next season?
I think we will never hear of him again. I think that's just one of those casualties of the storytelling. Like, oh, everybody will have forgotten about him. So let's listen to the scene where Tinkerbell gets her wings back from the risen, not-so-zombie Mother Superior.
Look who's still a fairy.
Look who's still a pirate. You were right.
Well, I lost a hand once. That's nothing.
For the record, I know why you risked your life back there, and it wasn't for yourself or revenge. It was for Emma.
Well done, Green.
Blue? You were...
gone. I know. But when you killed the shadow, mine was returned and I was revived. Thank you. You finally believed in yourself, Green. Tinkerbell. Welcome back.
I'm a fairy again? Even after I disobeyed all your rules?
I might have been overly strict. You deserved your wings, Tinkerbell. And you have earned them back many times over.
Thank you.
That's how you. Yeah, that's how you can tell that she's not a real nun, because it's all about you. You believe in yourself. She's more like the Dr. Phil variant. You'd think some transcendence would be good here, but no. It's just you believed in yourself, and that saved the day. Anyway, I liked how they kind of set up Hook's new purpose in life. Because, and I think we've discussed this in the past, I was always thinking, you know, Hook is going to sacrifice himself. Because his story arc is finished, he has nothing more to live for. He lost his love, he doesn't want to take revenge on Rumpel anymore, and so what's left for him to do? And here, they and that's why this is in the story, I think. We see that he has made a choice. He wants Emma, and that is what motivates him to risk his life. Interesting, I think. And I like it, because I think he's still a really great regular cast member now. And I like the humor. I like the kind of he is the Han Solo of Once Upon a Time. And I like a character
I
like
agree.
That.
Yeah, I totally, like, I'd be very sad if he went away.
Yes. I think a lot of people would be sad, because, there's no other character like him. He's quite unique, and it just, you know, a good cast is an ensemble, and you need characters like him where you can just kind of play with that that rogue, like, you cannot truly trust him. He's clever, he's also got a sense of humor, and he's got a kind of a dark side to him. It's an interesting character. So I was glad that was set up here. Didn't really care much for the flashback. It was just very brief, just to say that, just to tell us that, well, you know what, he is, he has a new reason in life. What else happens? Then we get, of course, the whole switcheroo, and Rumpel thinking that he can disarm Peter Pan by using that bracelet, and apparently, it's created by Pan himself. I was like, "What is that? Just a bit naive to tell everyone to just go away and he would handle it." The moment he did that, I was like, "Oh, he's either going to kill Peter Pan, but no, that would be too violent for this series, or he's going to get killed himself." And well,
I would have thought that was moving the plot, except it is in character for Rumpel to think he can handle it and for them to go on.
Yeah.
That's been in Rumpel's character the whole time. But for him to say, "I took this off of Greg and Tamara," and I'm sitting there going, "Hello, mm-hmm. Who did Greg and Tamara work for? It's not going to work."
Well, it's Rumpel has had a lot on his mind lately. So, you know, being locked up in the little box for a while, I can forgive him that. So, who thought that he was going to cut off his arm or his
wrist? I did.
I totally did.
All of us did. He has experience with it, just, I think, or not?
No, he cut off the Hook's hand, right?
Yeah,
which made a delightful sense of irony.
Yeah. I had just watched an episode of The Walking Dead. So I was like, "Oh, yeah, I just cut off your arm." Yeah, they do that every week.
but I was thinking how wonderful that he's just the village coward. And, do you do it? Do you cut it off?
Yeah.
Do you cut off your hand to get your magic back? And then when he first came out, I thought he had done it, that he'd cut off his hand.
Yeah, me too.
And then he magicked his hand back. But when he held up the cuff and I realized where they were going with it, I was like, awesome.
Yes. And I love that actually the way he redeems himself and saves everyone is not through magic. It's self-sacrifice, which has always been so strong of this series. This is similar to the way J.K. Rowling uses magic in the Harry Potter world. It's like magic, yeah, it's there, but it's a tool. But ultimately, it's nothing compared to love, which is such a stronger, more primeval, you know, fundamental magic. And the same thing here. You know, he does not need magic to defeat Peter Pan. Actually, I would even say that he probably would have failed if he would have tried to use magic, because Peter Pan is so powerful. Instead,
and he knew that.
Yeah, he.
I didn't mean to interrupt.
I think he defeats Peter Pan with the only thing that Peter Pan cannot comprehend and cannot predict, by an act of love, because Peter Pan does not know love. He does not know sacrifice. He has never sacrificed himself. And
oh,
so,
man, they turned Peter Pan into Voldemort.
Yeah, well, totally, totally. And that's why he doesn't see it coming. And that's what's so brilliant about what happens there. This is the moment of triumph of Rumpel. He finally gets it. He understands that his power is not in the magic, what he always believed. It's ultimately the thing you least expect to be powerful, and that is sacrificing yourself, losing yourself. You know, it's what Jesus says. You can only, if you try to win your life, you will lose it. If you lose your life, that's when you will win it. And that's exactly what Rumpel understands and shows that he understands by bringing the ultimate sacrifice, which is killing himself and evil in the process.
What are you doing?
You see, the only way for you to die is if we both die. And now, I'm ready.
Fantastic acting in this scene. Really, really well done. And Shelley, you think that there's actually a parallel to this, right? This self-sacrifice.
Oh, I was going to say that it's not they've used this element before to some extent when Mary Margaret, after she killed Cora with the candle, mm-hmm. and she went to Regina and presented herself and said, "I did it, and I'm here for you to kill me. Kill me, and this is all over. Get your revenge, and all of this goes away. You stop with Henry. You stop with Emma. You stop hurting all the people of the town that I love." And Regina, remember, pulled the heart and looked at it and found that tiny little black speck and said, "I don't have to." So that element of knowing what the right thing to do is has been present throughout the entire series.
Yes.
It's just, I think, to watch Rumpel be redeemed in that way, for him to make that step and that connection, and then they tied it in so beautifully with the happy ending, because Pan kept saying, take the blade out, and we'll get our happy ending.
Mm-hmm.
But the happy ending, the being reunited with his father, is not a happy ending that Rumpel has ever has wanted in such a long time, centuries.
Mm-hmm.
His happy ending isn't to be with his father. His happy ending is to be with Bay, to reconcile with Bay, and now ultimately to save Bay.
Yes.
And this is the only way to do it.
Totally, totally. And that's kind of the end of that story arc, and connected to this dramatic event is the disappearance almost of the book of fairy tales. It's as if, well, we've told what a fairy tale is in essence, and it's illustrated by this flashback where we go back to the first season and we see Henry and talking to his teacher Snow. And we learn that Snow found this book of fairy tales, and it appeared almost magically. It's kind of interesting. So,
I wondered if the blue fairy had something to do with that, because she seemed to know that the story would present itself.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And the book didn't disappear. Both my daughters caught it real fast. When the cloud of magic comes in, the curse comes back,
uh-huh.
It goes around the book. It doesn't go over the book or through the book. It goes, it kind of parts around it.
Hmm. Interesting. But I love this return to the pilot episode of the entire series, where Mary Margaret talks about fairy tales as being the carrier of hope, and we tell these stories because they remind us that there's always hope. And we've repeated this so many times over the years that we've done this podcast. Like, this series is about hope and about the strength, the power of hope, and that hope is actually what leads you to a happy ending. And I thought it was wonderful that this came back here at this point in the story. And that's why I felt like this could be totally the series finale. It's like a perfect conclusion. And you know, what more is there to tell?
Regina.
Yeah, that's where everything kind of went to a four with me. I'm like, it can't be over. This is really disappointing. I was pretty angry
because you kept saying the curse is coming. If it was just going to be Regina just has to destroy the scroll, then it would be really disappointing. But when she woke up and she said, I saw what I have to do, not what or what needs to be done. What was the word she used? Because remember, the word was just like, whoa.
Mm-hmm.
And then she realizes she has to pay the price.
Yes. And she realizes it when she gets the scroll, and then it flashes through her mind, apparently, what the sacrifice will be, what the price will be for this magic, and is going to be another sacrifice, and it's being separated from Henry. And it comes at the time that she has finally embraced being a mom, being Henry's mom, and really, truly loving him, which in a way she has always done,
But not just him. She's accepted all of him, and that includes Emma, that includes Snow, that includes Charming. She's finally one of them. She's being embraced almost by the entire town for saving Henry, for saving them. And she is now the one that's going to save them again by destroying the scroll. How ironic that to create the curse, to enact the curse as a matter of vengeance, she had to destroy the one thing she loved most, and to redeem herself, she has to let go. Not destroy, but let go.
Yes.
Separate herself from what she loves most.
And she would never see him again. And not even remember him. Although, we'll talk about that. But there is the possibility that once they revert to fairy tale land, everybody will forget about everything. And so it's almost as if it was all for nothing. Because it will be erased. It happened, and that in itself is important, but there will be no memory. Will she go back to being the evil queen? And so are we going to start all over again?
But the people in Fairytale Land won't forget. Only Emma will forget because she stays in this world.
Right.
And Storybrooke will undisappear. How do you say that?
Yeah.
So be undone. Dissolve. So everything, her memories will be undone because...
Okay, I thought that also the fairy tale characters would forget again,
no,
but that's
no.
not the case.
Because then why would Hook come back to...
Well, that was one of my questions.
It was just Emma. And so I was wondering, I was saying that would drag them all back to Storybrooke and Henry would be left alone. Mm-hmm. But I like the way they wrote that if Emma, since she was the savior and she is the only one who could escape the curse, so she could go with him. And Regina gave them to each other to go. And so Henry would be cared for.
Yes.
And then she gave Emma a gift.
Yeah, but before she does that, let's linger a moment, Emily, because this, I thought, was a very moving scene. It's this Henry forgives Regina, or embraces. It's not just Regina embracing Henry as her son, but it's also vice versa. Henry is like, you're not a villain.
This isn't fair. It's all my fault.
What do you mean?
If I had never gone to get Emma, if I just lived under the curse with you, none of this would have ever happened. I thought I was alone. I thought you didn't love me. But I was wrong.
Henry. I was wrong too. It wasn't your fault. It's mine. I cast a curse out of vengeance. And I'm a villain. You hurt Mr. Gold. Villains don't get happy endings.
You're not a villain. You're my mom.
You know, again, this reminds me of... It's actually reconciliation. It's confession, and it's a reestablishing of the relationship, which is what happens in confession. It's beautiful. Both Henry and Regina say they're sorry for the mistakes they made. I mean, Henry giving his heart to Pan, that was kind of a flawed moment. And Regina, of course, having a much bigger burden of evil and wrong decisions. And yet they confess to each other, and that is the moment that this relationship gets sealed. And I thought this was beautiful and very moving. I did not cry. Really not.
Okay, I did. We all had tears. We were just like, oh my goodness.
Yeah, it was moving. And then
I thought they did such a great job wrapping it up.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's awesome. And then as you said, Regina gives Emma a new gift. And, well, let's listen to what she offers.
Storybook will no longer exist. It won't ever have existed. So these last years will be gone from both your memories. And we just go back to being stories again.
What will happen to us?
I don't know.
It doesn't sound much like a happy ending.
It's not. But I can give you one.
You can preserve our memories?
No. My gift to you is good memories. A good life for you. And Henry, you'll have never given him up. You'll have always been together.
You would do that?
When I stop Pan's curse and you cross that town line, you will have the life you always wanted.
But it won't be real.
Well, your past won't, but your future will.
So, new memories, in a way, made-up memories, but absolutely necessary, just on the basic story necessity. They can't just wake up in Boston and with a gap of so many years. I mean, Emma wouldn't even understand how she got, you know, how Henry ended up there. So there needed to be like a replacement for everything that happened over the past few years.
Mm-hmm. But I do love the fact that there's that residual memory that, you know, you saw it all the way through the first season with them, you know, Ruby and her wolf symbols. And, you know, so you see, you know, them waking up in Boston and it's 8:15. And then, you know, they're playing that song on the stereo that was the song Neil was listening to.
Oh, on that. All right.
Yeah.
Right.
Great.
Yeah.
Great catch.
Isn't it New York City? Weren't they in New York?
I think it's New York.
Oh, New York City.
Yes.
Yeah. And it's. And the song is, you know, playing. And plus, Henry makes reference to the way that Granny had made hot chocolate in the past. And that's the way he wants his hot chocolate.
With cinnamon.
So, yeah, with cinnamon. So, it's that residual memory is still there.
Now, is it moral what Regina does here? I mean, after all, it is, you know, kind of giving Emma fake memories.
Well,
I don't know.
I don't know.
I think my reasoning would be, you know, this is, yes, it's fake, but it is in line with what happened in the past years. So Emma did embrace Henry and became a mother and grew into being a mom. And so I think there are good reasons to do it like this. Not to mention that the alternative would be totally unacceptable because it would be totally weird to miss like 3 years in your existence, and it would have created
so much
tension.
Well, not to mention you got to set up the next half of the season.
Yeah, that too.
Yeah, but she also does it. Regina does it out of love, not only for Henry but also for Emma. She really, what you said earlier, she embraces her whole extended family.
Yeah.
And that's why she does it.
Mm-hmm.
And I really love that, because that's what she said herself. I've been trying all those years that you were in my life to get rid of you so I could care for Henry.
Mm-hmm.
And now she just gives Henry to Emma and makes sure that she has the proper memories for it.
Yes.
And I liked the element of a 1 year later.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
That time passed.
Mm-hmm.
Did you call that? Didn't you call that last week?
Yes.
I think we did predict quite a few things, but it's really nice to see that they were still able to surprise us in the execution. Yeah, it's 1 year later, so life seems to be very harmonic, and you can imagine that. On the other hand, for all the fairy tale characters, this must be bittersweet. Because yes, they know that now Emma and Henry are safe. They are probably happy, and yet they still have that memory of them and missing them. And so it does leave them with suffering for the rest of eternity, if fairy tale land is eternal. So in a way, Peter Pan gets his revenge. He does make them suffer, but it's, you know, suffering that stems from love, not from slavery. And then, of course, the big surprise, and I was certain that they were just going to end it there in New York, and it's like, so why should I watch the rest of this season in March? And that's when this happens.
I'm lost.
Do I know you?
Look, I need your help. Something's happened, something terrible. Your family is in trouble.
My family's right here. Who are you?
No, friend. Look, I know you can't remember me, but I can make you.
Oh! Ouch! So how are you doing?
A long shot. I had to try. I was hoping you felt as I did.
Father gonna feel the handcuffs when I call the cops.
Look, I know this seems crazy, but you have to listen to me. You have to remember.
Who was that? No idea. Someone must have left the door open downstairs. Go on, let's eat.
Yeah, Hook. When that blam 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 on the door, and how many of you thought who did you think it was going to be?
Hook could not be anybody else.
I don't know.
My kids were thinking it would be Neil.
No,
I didn't.
And I knew it would be Hook.
Yeah, because
what would happen if Neil was standing in front of a door? And of course she would know Neil.
Yeah, because that's
Henry's
before
father.
It's before the restored memory. So yes. But well, it could have been anyone, I guess. But we know that Hook has the possibility to travel with his ship between those realms, and so it kind of makes sense. You know, New York, there is a harbor, so yeah, he could show up there.
Well, and he wasn't affected by the original curse.
Oh,
he was protected
true.
From it.
That's a good
Cora.
Point. I forgot about that. Yes, and
but,
so
but she doesn't remember. She clearly doesn't remember who he is. And so they did say that they were going to go back to a very similar to the season premiere or series premiere type of show. So I'm wondering, do we have to relive through the whole season one, season two, as we see her gain her memory?
I don't think so. I think there will be, and he tries to actually speed it up by just kissing her. Because
yeah.
Wasn't that also the way in which Gold starts to remember? I mean,
no, it was the sheriff.
Oh yeah, the sheriff and Regina. True, and it's like, wait, what?
No, the sheriff. Emma kissed the sheriff, yeah. And he started to remember little bits and pieces of himself as the huntsman.
Right.
And when Regina found out, of course, she killed him, and
yeah,
that was the first time we saw that special effect.
Yeah, kisses are very powerful. So, you know, kudos to Hook for trying. But yeah, it's not a very good idea. Just knowing Emma's past, and she knew how to stand up for herself, and yeah, it's kind of a wrong move here. But and time was running out anyway, so they couldn't finish that. But you know, of course, that the next episode in March, it's all going to be, you know, in fairy tale land. Now, is this really truly the end of Storybrooke? Or will that something? I mean, that's a whole film set as well. They've been filming there for 3 years. I wonder what
they're
gonna
do. I think it's the end of Storybrooke.
Okay. Yeah. Well, you know, I'm not too sad about it, because I was getting enough of that town, and it was a bit drab and always raining. Mm-hmm. And yeah,
they may use it for flashbacks, or they may refilm certain
perhaps.
Scenes that we didn't see.
Yeah.
Kind of like you made the Back to the Future reference, mm-hmm. but maybe it'll be like Back to the Future 2 when he goes back, and he goes back again, and he's watching himself. It, you know, from. There's two of them, but maybe there'll be some element that Hook has got to get Emma to, you know, he's got to convince her of what's going on and what he's saying. Mm-hmm. So there's going to be at least two main storylines going on now. There's going to be the Enchanted Forest, and then there'll be the flashback, and there'll be New York with Hook and Emma, and there'll be a flashback on either side over this past year.
Well, what worries me is that we're not going to see Storybrooke anymore, and that the entire second half, parallel to what they did with Neverland, is just going to take place in green screen CGI created backdrops. That's
maybe they'll build a few sets.
I hope so. I truly hope so. Just get the budget, you know, but don't do just virtual sets because it's just not there yet in terms of quality. But oh well.
Yeah, but if you get rid of one set like Storybrooke, then you have money to build another set, right?
Well, but it's just a real village, so I'm not sure if that cost them so much. Actually, it's usually pretty cheap to have real sets, but I don't know. Well, let's not speculate about that. Instead, let's listen to wrap things up here to the promo, because there was actually a promo for the next the next episode. I was a bit surprised that they actually went so far as to include a promo for the next half of the season, and it is quite shocking. And of course, I'm trying to find it, but it must be in one of the links, Inge. But do you have it?
It's on the in the article, on the top of the article. I linked to in there.
Okay. All right. Let me see if I can find it.
The Examiner.
Oh, there it is. Yeah, yeah, I've got it. So let's listen.
On Sunday, March 9th.
We're back.
Once Upon a Time returns with no repeats for the rest of the season.
Do you know who cursed us?
And an all-new spellbinding chapter.
Your parents are in great danger.
What are you talking about?
As one of the world's...
What did this to him?
...most sinister characters...
That's not possible.
...invade Storybrooke. Once Upon a Time returns all new this March, and see full episodes now on Watch ABC Online or download the app.
After The Wicked Witch, we get... Or no, wait, after Neverland, we get The Wicked Witch, we get Oz. And I think there is enough in the story of Oz to actually fill out the entire, you know, rest of the season in terms of the possibilities for the story. I'm not sure if they will, but... I like
but did I hear the she invades Storybrooke? That's what it said.
Really? Let me listen again.
Oh. On Sunday, March
9th. We're back.
Once Upon a Time returns with no repeats for the rest of the season.
No repeats?
Do you know who cursed us?
And an all-new spellbinding chapter.
Your parents are in great danger.
What are you talking about?
As one of the world's...
What did this to him?
...most sinister characters...
That's not possible.
...invade Storybrooke.
You're right!
Once
Storybrooke!
Upon a Time
returns. Oh my gosh!
This month. Well... And see full episodes now on Watch ABC
I totally
Online
missed
or
that.
Download the app.
I was just watching all the visuals and I totally didn't listen to what they said.
Storybrooke is still there.
Yeah, so is that a kind of a goof up, or is Storybrooke still there?
No, I think this is probably written with care. So Storybrooke is not erased. How do they get back to... interesting.
Well,
interesting.
What if hypothetically, they've gone back to the Enchanted Forest and mm-hmm. all the kingdoms are destroyed. Everything, all the land is, you know...
Uh-huh.
So they come in and they form a new land and they call themselves Storybrooke and they reset it with a government or a rule similar mm-hmm. to what they were living in Storybrooke. Because essentially they've all been lifted up and just replanted.
Well,
and they're...
Okay.
New Storybrooke.
Can I just say something about that? Because, okay, if Hook was not part of the original curse, where does Hook get transplanted to? Neverland or Enchanted Forest? Or where does he go if he's not part of that curse? Does he kind of get stuck there? Because he really had no technical home?
Well, he was on that island with Korra.
Oh, that's right.
But so he goes back to the Enchanted Forest because that's where he was when the curse happened. He was just with Korra in that protected dome. And so won't Aurora be there also, and Philip and Mulan and Robin Hood and all the others there?
I guess we'll just have to wait and see. But this wraps up our finale discussion, our winter finale discussion of Once Upon a Time. Stay tuned, keep subscribed to the feed, because there might be new episodes even before the new the spring season starts. But for now, we're going to take a short Christmas break, and we wish you all a Merry Christmas, a Happy New Year. And again, stay tuned and follow us on Facebook, on Twitter, and of course on our website, onceuponatime.sqpn.com.
SQPN, leading the way in Catholic new media.